This is Speaking of Faith, First Person. This online exclusive is part of Repossessing Virtue, an ongoing series in which we search for fresh ways to think and talk about the current economic crisis. I'm Krista Tippett, the host of Speaking of Faith. Here I speak with Joan Chittister, who is an author, social activist, and a sister of Mount St. Benedict's Monastery in Erie, Pennsylvania. You know, basically, just talk to me about in what ways do you consider this moment we're in to be a moral or spiritual crisis as well as an economic crisis for you or for our culture?
Well, you're asking the perfect question on the perfect day, and I'll tell you why. I, without any consciousness of this conversation this morning, I got up knowing that this was the day that I had promised our staff that I would do my Christmas message. And when I sat down to do the Christmas message to the readers of the Monastic Way and to people who come to our own website, I suddenly realized that there was absolutely no way I could, with any kind of honesty or integrity, do the kind of Christmas message that I had done for the last 20 years. Mm. And so I knew I was agitated inside. I knew I was uncomfortable. And when I finally consciously asked myself that question, what is your problem? This is a Christmas message. It's 300 words at most, for heaven's sakes. Write to these people. I said, but if I write them the truth, if I write what I'm really thinking, what kind of a Christmas message is that? And then I made up my mind, Krista, that I was simply going to sit down and do it, and I start, and the message is this: this will be a very different Christmas this year. Mm-hmm. It will be the first time in recent U.S. history that this country at Christmas time ever has a palpable sense of vulnerability. Yeah. That in this meltdown, something has melted down in all of us, and something has risen to fear, panic, denial, deep concern for the future. The whole notion that the American staple, security, is now under threat is shaking people's confidence, not just in the future, but in themselves, because so many of them are powerless in this situation.
Right.
We're about, the spiritual aspect of this particular Christmas is that pastors can stop talking about taking consumerism out of Christmas. Consumerism's gone.
Right.
What you're going to have to put into Christmas is another entire approach to what we call Merry Christmas. We're going to have to find something to rejoice in that is more than cosmetic, that is more than accumulation, that is more than status. The parties are going to be smaller. They're going to be more intimate. The gifts are going to be more useful and less exotic. We're going to maybe, for the first time in a long, long time in this country, take the money out of the holiday and put the feast back in the feast day. Mm-hmm. It's our one moment to identify with what we love to talk about the our remembrance of the birth of Jesus, and that is that Jesus, in his humanity, takes on our emptiness.
Right.
We have to find now, the spiritual challenge is to fill our emptiness with something other than things, to fill it with the intimacy that comes from just inviting people that you like over, right, to sit down and talk for a while. It's got something to do with giving a different kind of gift. You know, I've been fascinated in my own lexio and spiritual reflection on on the Gospels for years about the gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh.
Okay.
You know, and they always told us that this recognized the kingship of Jesus, and it recognized worship, and it was the foreshadowing of the burial with spices of this Jesus. Well, I looked them all up. I decided that gold, frankincense, and myrrh had to be something other than simply Middle Eastern spices. And if it were spices, I wanted to know what they used them for. And I discovered in today's research that in gold, frankincense, and myrrh, you have echoes of generosity, of serenity. Frankincense is still used by people who work with essential oils to bring a sense of calm into life.
Right.
And myrrh was a healing element for the body, actually, that brings, in other words, attention to the fullness of the spirit, that you are releasing spirit by using the myrrh and capturing it at the same time. The Egyptians used it for mummification. The Chinese used it for healing oils.
Hmm.
And I sat back in my desk chair and smiled to myself.
I've never heard all of this.
Isn't it lovely? I had finally unlocked for myself one of the questions of Scripture. What does this mean? Why these three things? Why not palm branches and pomegranates and grapes?
Mm-hmm.
Why gold, frankincense, and myrrh? Generosity, serenity, and spirit, new spirit. It is a spiritual moment. We have to walk around. We have to walk around that crib and say, "What am I filling my own life with now?" It's had real meaning to me.
I wonder how a moment like this. You know, the general question that we're asking also our listeners is, what moral and spiritual resources, what virtues do you bring to approaching this moment? And, you know, I'm curious with you about Benedictine virtues in particular. Is there anything in particular that seems especially resonant or to be taking on new importance or new meaning in this kind of historical moment?
Well, it's a great question because, Benedictines don't take vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience.
Yeah.
Those are the ones that people know best. We take obedience, conversion, and stability. Stability is a really big thing to Benedictines. What does it mean? It means what that poster said 15 or 20 years ago, bloom where you are planted. Mm. Be the best of whatever you're in and wherever you are. We're planted in a society very different from the one that we celebrated in January of 08. Coming to Christmas of 08 and January of 09, stability means that you'll work this through, that you will stay and you will make good life out of whatever you have at this moment, and that you will be there for others. Why are Benedictines stable? So that you always have a place to come.
Hmm.
The interesting thing about monasteries is there's always somebody home.
Right. Stability is an essential virtue, kind of a foundation of hospitality, I guess.
It is the foundation of the life. It says, I'm going to stay in this life, and I'm going to create a home for others, create a home around me, and whatever comes here, I'm going to see through. I'll give you an example. Lake Erie was some 40 years ago pronounced dead, you may remember. They said that Lake Erie, that it was over, that the pollutants and the chemicals had simply destroyed any revival power of this natural resource. Unlike a lot of other religious groups who are international and whose great gift is to move around the globe doing what is necessary in various parts of the world. The Benedictine gift is to stay where they are and do what has to be done in that place. In other words, to live the very life, to depend on what everybody else in Erie, Pennsylvania depends on. So the sisters looked at what was happening to the lake, and our people who were into ecology before it was a word joined with four other groups to sue the state of Pennsylvania over the legislation that permitted the polluting of the lake with chemicals. We won. And they tell us that now over half of the commercial fish that come out of the Great Lakes come out of Lake Erie. Now, the monastery in Erie is going to rise and fall on that lake just like everybody else. It's our responsibility to bring that voice and that consciousness because we understand what stability is about. Mm-hmm. Stability is being the best of who you are, wherever you are, bringing the best of what you can bring to whatever the situation is that you're in, to staying with the spiritual life, staying with the search for God at this moment in time. It brings the best out of you. It doesn't stop you from growing. It demands that you grow.
Where are you looking for wisdom and for leadership in your immediate world, close to your life? Or where are you finding it?
Do you mean public leadership?
Well, I think so. I mean, it's a little bit different to ask you this question because you're so much a part of an extended community. And, you know, so many people are quite isolated in their nuclear families that have been so celebrated in our culture.
Yeah, you're right. It's a difficult question for me. I find the wisdom and the leadership and the vision, interestingly enough, in the tradition. I come from a tradition that's over 1,500 years old.
Yeah.
This is a tradition, remember, that went through the Middle Ages and the Crusades and feudalism and the rise of national states and the bubonic plague. We'll make it. we just, you see, put those two questions together. The stability question and the tradition answer. You have to have, it doesn't make any difference who you are or whether you're in a nuclear family or an extended family.
Mm-hmm.
The fact of the matter is that there has to be something that grounds you. There has to be something that that you draw strength from in your immediate world from another way of looking at the world,
right,
from another way of being in the world. Our anxiety, a lot of it is coming from the fact that we have learned since World War II to be in the world as consumers and as inventors. We invent a new world for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
When we had the first oil crisis in the United States, nobody took it seriously. They said then, it doesn't make any difference. If they really need oil, they'll go into a laboratory and make it. That wasn't wrong. People are in laboratories as we're talking, trying to get fuel out of water,
right,
and saying they're going to be able to do that.
Right.
But that won't make any difference. If the attitude toward water is the attitude we brought to oil, we'll be right back in this same situation 50 years from now.
Mm.
We must draw from the wisdom and the stability that spiritual values give us. We're in this situation. The globe is in this situation because of unmitigated and raw American greed. Until we can say that out loud, looking in the mirror, and realize that it started with us, people knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
They gave loans they knew people could not handle or that they didn't even bother to check. Why? Because they got a fee for signing off on the mortgage.
Right.
That's greed.
Mm.
And that kind of attitude toward the world will never give you either wisdom or stability.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything else that you really want to say that's on your mind?
Well, only this, that the whole Christmas story, if you see it through Middle Eastern eyes, that supersede what one scripture scholar calls the first Christmas novel ever written, you would understand that a lot of those words don't mean what we mean. So when we say, for instance, that Jesus was put in a manger, most mangers in the Middle East are really part of the house. They are where the animals live, but they're also part of the hospitality of the family. Mm. Whatever we have left, we have mangers of our own. If we're in a manger right now, that doesn't mean that we are without everything. It does mean that we have got to develop more of who we are. Mm. I wouldn't see this, in other words, as a Christmas without gifts, but I do see it as a Christmas that will demand a whole new set of gifts from us. Mm.
You've been listening to Sister Joan Chittister. She is a Benedictine nun, author, and activist. Her many books include Wisdom Distilled from the Daily. This is Repossessing Virtue, Speaking of Faith, continuing exploration of the economic crisis. For more, subscribe to the SOF podcast and visit speakingoffaith.org.